After that talk, we'll close with the usual manner. I want you all to know that I am a happy, joyous, and free Al-Anon, and my name is Tina. Good morning. And I have a present. Does anyone want it? Come and get it, hon. I want to thank the committee. I have been absolutely showered with love. I have been escorted and taken care of and fed more than just by food. I personally thank each and every one of you, Dee and Elizabeth, and a particular thank you myself to Susie, because I tell you what, whoever got her to do this job, she's done it better than I've ever had anybody do it before. When she said she's going to do something, she did it, and I thank you for that with all of my heart. One time I was in a Bible study, and there were 300 women in this Bible study. And it was similar of a setting like this, a little higher of a podium, and we were kind of at an angle, and we had a section here and a section there and a section over there, and the lady came in and said, "Ladies," because we were all, I mean, we were just hens going to town. And she said, pardon me, I have a gift. Does anyone want it?" And silence fell over that group of 300 women. That in itself was a miracle. I think every time we have a moment of silence, it's a miracle. And for us, there was this dense silence for about a two-minute period. I give you credit, baby. I mean, boom, I'll take it. And what happened was fear ran over most of us that said, "What does she want from us? What do I have to do? What price do I have to pay when I go up there?" And then some little hussy over here in the middle aisle said, "I'll take it." And then we went from fear to resentment. We didn't like her a bit. And then we got angry because she got it and we didn't. And that reminds me of the difference between envy and jealousy. But this lady said this, and I don't know why, but I just wanted to do that. No special reason. She says, "That's what God does to us each and every day of our life. I have a present for you." And for many years, I said, "What does he want? What price do I have to pay? Am I going to be embarrassed when I say, yes, I'll go that route? Will my friends make fun of me?" And each and every day I get to make that decision, and I don't have to make it just once. I can make it several different times in my life. I'm sorry I don't have a present for all of you. She's just quicker than the rest of you. And for that, maybe it's just an encouraging word, because I believe that's what this program does for us. Each and every day, God says to us, "I have 12 small little things that I'm going to ask of you." And, you know, the steps really do. They ask so little of us. Changes our entire way of living and thinking. But they truly are just 12 small little things that they ask of us. I come from a family that was a wonderful family, a very loving family. A little crazy, extremely possessive and smothering, but a very great, loving family. My mom and dad, like a couple of our other speakers, were divorced when I was very, very young, and I had this sense of loss because I did not have that much contact with my father. Through the grace of God and the fellowship and the steps, I got to know my father before he passed away. But my mom, shortly after she divorced my dad, remarried, and I don't know if he was a drunk. I could call him a duck because he walked like a duck and he drank like a duck and he had several accidents that involved alcohol. And I loved this man. He was exciting. Now, my mother's personality changed greatly after she married this man, particularly when he drank. And when he drank and things got crazy and she would start screaming and hollering, and we kind of go through that ballet of the flashing knives, my mom liked to threaten with certain things, which didn't make much difference, particularly if he was extremely inebriated. But I had this little act that I went into where I would become cute and humorous. And in my mind, somehow or another, one time maybe, it deferred the anger and the craziness that was going on in our family. And so I thought when I did that I could control. And so I did that for a number of years. I cannot believe that truly that my being cute and humorous truly changed that situation, because in our family, we kind of dance like whooping cranes to keep everybody happy. We moved several times when I was a young child. I don't know if that's because they were hunting us or what. I really can't answer that. But we settled down in a small community where my mother's family lived, and that was around fourth or fifth grade. In fifth grade, it was a true turning point for me in my life for many reasons. One thing that happened is the drinking got worse, and no matter how cute I was, nothing changed. Things got worse. My mother's attitude got worse, and I got more fearful. I became extremely scared of school. I was just petrified of school. By the time I got out of fifth grade, I had bleeding ulcers. I was eating baby food. And for a number of years, I thought it was just because of the alcoholism. A little later on, I'll tell you a little bit more about that. It's too bad I wasn't a drunk, because I was a great puker. I tell you, you get ulcers and you get going on that, some things start happening. Divorce did come for that in my family, and my stepfather's mother did have a lot of money, and so even though the drinking was there, we had a lot of things. And when the divorce came, we went from living in the greatest house in this small community, the people in our town called it the White House, to a 1956 trailer, where if you turned on too many electrical things, sparks came out of the electrical wiring. And that was interesting. And I had this assumption that that's how life would go. You would go from having absolutely everything to having absolutely nothing. There was a pendulum that would swing, and that's how the world turned. Now, in this time, as far as my religious beliefs, just to kind of inject that, I had a darling woman that was our youth director at our church. Now, we're talking four kids in the youth group, so we're not talking a large church here. But she had that sparkle in her eye that we all get to have, that I see on each one of your faces this morning in each one of your eyes. And she got it through just religion, and I love this woman. And she had what I believe we call that program of attraction. And I wanted what she had. Now, before I got to that particular church, I went to the Baptist church just long enough until I found out they took you to this tank. And I didn't do well with water, because I just about drowned a couple of times when I was a kid. And I liked their music, but I didn't like that tank, so I went to the Nazarene church. Now, I'm telling you, they had music, because I love music. They had tambourines and trombone players over there, and I really liked them, but they took you to the river. And I certainly wasn't going down in no river. I went to a wedding. It was a Catholic wedding. My maiden name is Bettino. Yes, that is Italian. It was tough going through life as Tina Bettino, but I made it. I don't think my parents put those two names together when they were thinking of naming me. And this priest came up to me and I said, "Pardon me, excuse me, Father, I cannot stay for the reception, but I have a wedding present. Would you mind taking this, you know, to the bride if you're going to the reception?" He says, "Certainly will. Do you have your name on there?" I said, "Yes, I do." He says, "What is your name?" I said, "My name is Tina Bettino." He went, "Ah, a good Catholic." And I went, "No, actually, I'm a good Methodist." And because by that time I found out they sprinkled, so I stuck it out with them. And this priest told me, he said that I was Italian, and I wasn't Catholic, and I was going to die and burn in hell, and that my name meant war. And I tell you what, I never went to that Catholic church. I like the idea of burning candles. I still do to this day, but I was not interested in that. Never was introduced to the Jewish religions. Too bad. I think they got a pretty good thing going there, but my life's not over with yet. Anyway, I'm kind of bopping along as a young kid, and I found something with that youth director. I found a belief in God that later on, because I was such a good girl, I qualified and everything was fine. And I was the perfect kid. Peace at all costs, whatever it took. My sister despised my stepfather. And anyway, I'm not going to get into that. Never mind. But anyway, my sister would get into arguments with my mother. And I would do anything just to keep peace for everything. You know, and I did that for a long time, even after I got into Al-Anon. And learning how to get off of that triangle and stepping away is the only way that that triangle is going to learn how to either stand on itself, which isn't possible, or move on. Anyway, I at a young age, being a good little girl, qualified and became very spiritual. I just loved God. I absolutely loved God. So anyway, I also was very good at managing money. And when we went from having everything to having nothing, I was about 16 years old, and I, now get this word, took on the responsibility of the finances in my family. Now, I don't know how I learned how to manage money. It's not that great of a thing to do. It just happened to come naturally for me. And I remember taking care of my family for a number of years. There are certain things that I still do, but I do it because I choose to do it today, not because I feel like I have to do it today. At this time, the craziness that went on in my family was just wild. And when the separation came from my mom and my stepdad, he left, and there left my mother with all these wonderful active Al-Anon traits. And my sister by then was married, so I was the lone stranger there to get it. And I resented it an awful lot because my mom tried her best to and in looking back on it, she loved me so dearly. All she wanted to do was give me the very best. She wanted the very best for me. You know, I think that's what we want for our kids. It's just sometimes we show it in strange ways. So anyway, my saving grace was a speech teacher. I got involved in speech, and this man was my absolute godsend. He let me find ways to vent my frustrations about my home. And I would write different acts and original comedy monologues and do these at different speech meets, basically about the crazy life that we had in our family. And it was a way that I could vent out my frustrations. And for that man, I was extremely grateful. During this time also, I found another lovely Catholic priest. And this one I really did appreciate because he would allow me to come to his church and talk to him. And he didn't pray over me. He didn't tell me I was a bad person or a good person. He just would listen to me. And for that, I'm very grateful to that man. I just recently read an article in the paper where he was excommunicated because of some behaviors on his own part that the church frowned upon. And with God's grace and hope, I truly hope that I will be able to find that man to thank him, because if he hadn't been in the priesthood, I don't know who would have helped me. God probably would have sent me another angel, but that's the one that he chose to send me. And for that, I'm grateful that the man was in the priesthood. My mom got crazy and I got married. Now, that's the way I looked at it. I really and truly thought, and I think I got the idea from her. She thought I was, you know, she was trying to control me so much that I tried to get a way out. And I was very young. I think I was like 19 years old when I got married. And I want you to know, I was a good girl up until that time, and something happened. You know, I was foot loose. Fancy free. Yeah, I was married, but you know how that goes. Don't worry about that. I turned from being a good girl into doing things that you don't write home to mother about, and you certainly don't talk to your ministers about. And there's some things that I did during that time that I'm not very proud of, but I do know this, that there are things that I did during that time that have helped many other people, and for that I'm extremely grateful. My husband and I moved to Kansas City. And during this time, I landed a job at downtown Kansas City, and I was hair down to here. I was it. I was working downtown. I was from this little small town in Illinois. But now, baby, I am hip, slick, and cool. Marriage was on the rocks, and I just started doing things that you don't write home to mom about. I went to a party one night, and there he was, baby. You know how that beam of light comes down out of the sky and that halo that goes around him and says, "This is the one, darling." Mr. Wright. And boy, my life took a turn. They went right there to the left. And it never has been the same since then. I was extremely self-centered. I was confident. I was cocky. I was just all those things that you wind up talking about in your fifth step. By this time, I am divorced. I've had affairs. I was dating a man that was crazy. That was Mr. Wright. We are having crazy, crazy times. I mean, we're telling me that, I just know this. He drank a lot, and there was just a lot of excitement and things and God, I just love alcoholics. There's just energy with them. They're unpredictable. And, ooh, God help the world, I'll tell you that. Everything is going fine. I mean, we are going along. Things are going just great guns. And he calls me up one day and says, I need to talk to you. I said, okay. And we have a special little spot. It was our spot there in Kansas City, the monument right there right outside of Crown Center. And he says, I want to meet with you. I said, okay. And we got up there and he said, I'm an alcoholic and I need to find help. And I'm going to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. Doctor, lawyer, Indian chief. Alcoholic? Alcoholic. Why did he choose this? What's an alcoholic? What does an alcoholic do? Well, it might have to do with alcohol, but I'm not sure about that. And, sure, I understood that there was a drinking problem, and there were some things that he did, some violent things. There was one particular moment during this time where I knew I could die. Physically, he is twice my size, and it scared me. But the insanity of my disease told me, don't worry, he'll never do that again. It won't happen again. Well, he got involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I want to just stop right here. If you have anyone in your family, if you're an alcoholic and you're here, and you have people in your family that are not involved in the program, if you're in Al-Anon and you have people that are drinking and they're not involved in the program, the greatest gift that you can give to these people is to get involved, get in the middle of the boat, get in the middle of the stream of our 12-step program, and you will help those people. Doesn't mean that they're going to do what you want them to do. It's just by you improving, you're going to see them differently, you're going to treat them differently, and therefore, they'll be different. And that's how it worked for me. My dear beloved got a sponsor. He was a confirmed bachelor. I didn't like this man. They said to get somebody who had what you wanted, and I didn't like that idea because I had my sights on marriage. You know how some of us ladies kind of sharpen up those eye teeth so we can dig in and hang on for the ride. Just to elaborate one other thing, because it's a mental picture that comes in my mind of what my beloved gave to me. He came to me and said, I love you with all of my heart. But if I do not work this program, I can't give you anything. I won't have anything to give you. He says, I'm going to walk this walk because these people have what I need. And he trudged that road of happy destiny and walked on and said to me, if you want to come, you can come along. They've got a program that can help you. And the image that I have in my mind is he wore a mirror on his back. And all I could see was a reflection of myself being left behind. And I didn't like what I saw. I did not like what I saw in myself at all. Now, I will tell you this. I did not leap into Al-Anon. Matter of fact, I tried several things to keep him in my teeth, in my grasp, if you will. I think one of the craziest things that I did was it was around Christmas time. And I had given him almost everything that I owned, thinking that if he had my things, he wouldn't want to leave me. So I gave him, like, my Christmas ornaments and all these things, and I was over at his apartment one night and was spending the night, and I decided that he was taking a bath, and before he came to bed, I thought, you know, I could be real alluring. How could I do that? So I took the Christmas lights and wrapped them around myself. And right at the foot of the bed was a plug-in. So I plugged in. And I'm lying there, and I'm kind of binking. So I just brought a sheet up because it made it even prettier, because then you could just... They weren't quite as bright, you know, he just came out of that shower. And all of a sudden I'm lying there and I thought, good God, he might be still wet. And I think in headlines, and I thought, you know, two people found fried in bed. That didn't hold his attention all that long. I really did. I did some of the craziest things. I can't believe some of the things that I did, thinking that that would just make him know how much I had to give him because I was in competition with Alcoholics Anonymous. He was, that's all he was doing. Good God, a hot date was a Friday night down at the old matron's hall, the young matron's hall. And we'd go there, and then we'd go afterwards to have ice cream. Well, between March and August, my beloved went to Alcoholics Anonymous, and he started changing. By then, he's working the steps. He and his sponsor are really getting into this. And then I found out that there were female alcoholics going to these meetings. And I didn't like that because, you see, I had the self-esteem of a snake's belly. And it was a little low, if you didn't pick up on that. And so I decided, well, I've got to check this out. And I was telling Bob this morning at breakfast that if alcohol would have worked for me, I'd have tried it. I'd have been a drunk, but I could not bear the thought of losing control. Good God, don't let go of it. Never had it, but I wasn't going to let go of it. Well, I started going to open AA meetings. And I want you all to know how God works. I went to this meeting, and there was this little nitty man. His name was Homer. He has since gone to the big book meeting in the sky. He looked like a bookie, wore this little hat. All he needed was little stubs in his hat. Looked like he slept through most of the meetings. He might have, but he was sharp as a tack, and they'd have a speaker. And then they had this format, AA and Al-Anon participation. And the way I got into Al-Anon was I had a lack of title. Hi, my name's Bill. I'm an alcoholic. And then they'd talk. Hi, my name is Mary, I'm an Al-Anon, and they'd talk. And all I could say was, hi, I'm Tina, and I belong to him. And I needed a title. And Homer started calling on me, and I'd kind of, hi, my name is Tina, you know, and they didn't know what I was. That was in my mind. They knew very well what I was. Between August and January, I went to 2 open AA meetings a week. And God is very gracious to me. I don't know if I can do this without crying. Those people in AA loved me into Al-Anon. And I thank them for it. And 2 of those people are here tonight that were at my first meeting. And Mary and Jack, I love you so much. And I thank you for the love that you gave me when I did not think I was lovable. You loved me back to life. Now, isn't that something that 2 people who lived in Kansas City who helped me so much are now living somewhere down in Texas during the winter months? And I asked Susie, I said, how in the name of Jesus did you find me? I don't normally do this. I spoke one time down in Arkansas, and that's how they got my tape. And I'll just pause right now since I'm squalling. Might as well get it all over with. You'll get into the rest of it, how I moved so many times. My husband and I are living in Florida. And there's another just beloved couple that are here. And God is being able to use me now as an instrument. Because this wonderful man has a sister that lives in the same town that I live in. And he wanted to contact her. And he's given me a letter to deliver. And I tell you what, I feel like I'm an angel of mercy. I hope I don't buff up that halo, but I just tilted. Is that it? Okay, I'll just tilt it and the rain can run off. But I thank you. And I know that whatever God has in his plan for you and your sister will be because of what he has planned. And I thank you for the opportunity to help you. Well, I went to my first Al-Anon meeting. They were all weird. Didn't like them. Didn't like them at all. I told them I was working in personnel at a large association, financial institution, and there were many people who had drinking problems, and I was there just for information. One old lady was just complaining because her husband wasn't taking out the garbage, and I said, I don't need this. Well, what happened was, I went to my actual first Al-Anon meeting, you know, where you take the mind and the, you know, the body and the mind does follow. And this lady I had contacted, who was out of the Sunday morning group that Mary and Jack and I used to go to, she had given me this lady's name. Her name was Lorraine. I have no idea whatever happened to Lorraine. But she gave me directions how to get to this meeting, and I did. I went to this meeting, and I got lost, and I couldn't find it. And she kept talking about a coffee pot, and I expected this coffee pot, a little coffee pot painted on the door in between these two storefronts. And I finally found it, and I was late, and I don't like being late. And I went through these doors, and it had double doors at the Metcalf group in Overland Park, Kansas. And you remember Loretta Young, how she would... Well, that's basically the way I came through those doors. I opened them up, and there were all those people. And I, of course, they all stopped and turned around and looked at me. I said, "Which one of you is Lorraine?" A little bitty hand came up. I said, "Well, you're a lovely lady, but you give lousy directions." And this lovely woman says, "You're a newcomer, I'm assuming. We have a meeting for you back here." And myself and another lovely gentleman, who we exchanged Christmas cards to this day, we went into this first step meeting, and I lost it. I just cried. We were in this little bitty meeting, and this experienced lady was sitting there telling us about the first step, and God, I have never in my life, since that time when I was a young kid and felt such a part of that church, which I had lost because you can't have affairs and be close to the church because you went from being a good girl to a bad girl and that'll screw you up in heaven, at least in this one's mind. And I just felt it. It was magic. I felt it in those open AA meetings, but I was still on the outside because I guess I didn't have that title. Well, I came back that next week. And they had a second, third, and fourth step meeting in another room. And I will tell you, the reason I kept coming back, because I think the first meeting's a tough one, but I truly think the hardest meeting is your second meeting because you have to come back. And I did come back, but I thought I was going to be in the big group by then. Well, they stuck me in that other little group. Well, I want you to know I stuck around for 4 weeks to find out what they were talking about in that big meeting. So sure enough, 4 weeks later, I went back to that group, and they were having elections that night. And God, I couldn't sit still. I mean, I had the jumps and jives. It was just, meetings were so long. And they needed a cookie chairman, and someone volunteered me. And God, I needed to be needed, so that's how I kept coming back. I had to buy cookies every week. And I want you to know, I spent days in front of the cookie counter. It seemed like, do they need chocolate? Do they need vanilla? I want to make sure that I do this right. Got to be just right. Didn't matter. They'd ate anything, I think. But that's what service did for me. Does anybody know what time did we start? What time do I quit? Oh, never mind. Who cares? That's right. Okay. Well, I just want you to know by this time I had to catch up with my beloved because he's on a race. He has taken a fourth and fifth step with this confirmed bachelor. And he's moving along, baby, in these steps, and I needed to catch up. So they had a meeting about sponsorship, and I thought, that's it. I need a sponsor. So I thought, now who am I going to get? Okay, find somebody who has what you want. And I found a woman who had a long-term marriage. She'd been married for like 30 years. I thought, that's what I want. So I made up my mind I was going to ask her to sponsor me, and this is where I started killing sponsors. You're laughing, but it's true. I was going to ask her that Wednesday night. So I went to that meeting, and they made an announcement that she'd had a heart attack. She didn't die. But she wasn't going to be back for a long time. Peg had had a heart attack. And God, I thought, oh, my. Now, I did not think, oh, my, I'm sorry she had a heart attack. I thought, my shit, I don't have a sponsor yet. And, yes, there were a lot of self-centeredness that wound up being looked at in my inventory. Well, I decided to ask somebody else that week. So I did ask this woman. Now, very important, get their phone numbers. She never came back. She said she'd sponsor me, but I never saw that woman again. So I waited a couple weeks thinking she'd come back, but she never came back. So I decided I'm going to get me a sponsor. So I ran up to this woman, Marie, and said, "Marie, would you be my sponsor?" And she said, "Well, I'd love to." I said, "Will you listen to my fifth step?" And she said, "Sure." I said, can we do it soon? She said, how about Saturday? I said, great. Now, this is Wednesday. I have not taken step four. But I am a woman who prepares. I know how to line things up. And so I quickly took a fearful, immoral inventory about everyone else. Went to Marie's apartment, gave her that inventory, and she never came back. Well, I didn't know what was going on, and I didn't know exactly what to do. So, I just hung loose. And by this time, my beloved came up with this idea of going to an AA convention. And I will tell you, this is the thought. I do remember this. Cold enema, brain surgery, AA convention. That was about the order. But I knew those AA women were going to be there. And on the flyer, it said dance. Well, they weren't going to be dancing with my beloved. So I said, oh, I'd love to. So we did. We went to this conference. And I heard my very first Al-Anon speaker. And she was telling from the podium things that I wouldn't have told a dead dog. She was just as honest as they possibly could get. And I went up to her afterwards. And I said, would you be my sponsor? She said, well, honey, I live in Little Rock, Arkansas. I live in North Little Rock, Arkansas. No, don't you? And you live in Kansas City. She said, well, how far along are you in the steps? I said, well, I just finished my fifth step. But my sponsor quit coming. And it was kind of like, well, you poor thing. She says, well, let's pray about this. And I'd love to keep in touch with you. Little did I know what I was in store for. She started writing me letters, and I'd write her letters back. Now, I used to write in hieroglyphics because, well, frankly, I've never been one to spell very well, and I'll tell you about that a little bit later also. So if you write just rotten, which I learned to do in fifth grade, used to write this way. If you learn to write this way, they can't read it. And she'd send me it back like I was she'd graded a paper, circled red things. What in the hell does this say? She was bigger than I was. And I just loved her to pieces, but there was a part of me that thought she could whoop me one good. And what it really was I wanted what that woman had. And I was willing to go to any lengths. And after corresponding with her for a while, she said to me, I think we need to start over again on your steps, darling. And that's exactly what we did. And we did this by mail. I do not recommend this. I just don't. But that's the way God worked for me in my program. And I got busy. I'll tell you what, I got busy. Bill and I, by this time, are talking marriage. You know, and we're real good with decisions. We're going to get married, right? Yeah, I want to get married. Do you want to get married? Yeah, I'll get married. Do you want to get married? I think I do. I don't know if I do or not. Do you? I'm not sure either. Well, I think I will. Well, maybe we shouldn't get married. I don't think we should either. Do you? Well, maybe we should. I love you. I love you too. But I tell you what, that's enough to keep you going in the morning. Well, when we started talking marriage, the sponsor of mine said, you need to take a step four, as it's written, a fearless moral inventory. And you need to take that step five and six and seven, because if you don't do it before you get into that marriage, you're going to be dragging in some baggage, baby. It could be very detrimental to your marriage. And I'll tell you what, by this time, if she'd have said, boil grass and drink it, I'd have considered it. Just because I was willing to go to any length. And I did that. I took a four-step inventory, as it is written. And my fifth step was, the best way I know how to tell you is it's exactly the way I lived my life for a long time. I got on a plane in Kansas City and flew to Dallas, Texas. Got on a different plane, flew to Memphis. Stayed on the same plane, but got to Little Rock. Now, I'm sure that there was probably a direct route, but I didn't ever know how to take a direct route. On the way home, I got to fly home. And that's basically the way, there was just a symbol in there for me. Now, the week before, because we had, my beloved and I had set a wedding date. We're going to do this. Ha-ha, we're going to do it. Oh, isn't this exciting? You know, and I'd taken that fourth and that fifth step. Oh, sixth and seventh could wait. I'm getting married. Oh, God. I was living with a gal. I was rooming with this dear friend of mine. Her name is Donna. And Donna had had many circumstances that I won't bore you with in her life. She had gotten extremely, severely depressed by this time. And it was the week before, as I said, before our wedding, and my beloved called me up and said, I can't do this. I said, you can't do what? He says, I can't get married. I wanted to kill him. I mean, a slow, agonizing death is what I wanted to do to him. But by that time, I had enough program that I knew to just show up. And I said, well, pray about it. He says, I'm not going to change my mind. And I said, that's okay. Let's just pray about it. By that time, I had given my resignation. I had hired my replacement. I had shipped my furniture because by that time, my beloved had been transferred from Kansas City and given it to him because we had bought a house. And once again, there were some devious thoughts still behind there because I thought if he had my stuff, surely to God he wouldn't ship it back. He'd have to have me. I had this dear lady that I was living with that was talking suicide at all times. I kept encouraging her, please try to get some help, and I did not know how to help her. I'd call the suicide hotline, and they said if she's talking about it that freely, she won't do it. Not always necessarily true. By this time, I was sponsoring an Alateen group. That's a spiritual experience. If you haven't done it, I sure encourage you to try it. It was at that Wednesday night group. After my beloved called me that morning, I was just enraged. I was so angry. And my roommate came to me and said, you're going to be okay, Tina. And I said, don't tell me I'm going to be okay. I'm angry. And she said, very calmly, you are going to be okay. And I was just, I'm crying, I'm gnashing teeth. I got in the car and she come out and I can still remember standing there on the porch and I wanted to take something to work that day. She handed it to me. I said, I don't even want to fool with it. Just leave me alone. And once again, she said, you're going to be okay, Tina. And I went driving down the road and I said, damn it, why am I taking it out on her? Go back, apologize. And I said, I can't do it. That little something inside me says, I can't do it. I'll talk to her later. I went on to work and some young gal came up and presented me with a wedding present and I lost it. I just kind of went off the deep end. Well, I went to the meeting room where God and I still meet today. That was the bathroom. And sat down on the commode, clothes and all, just sat down with this wedding present. And I said, God, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And just that still little voice says, you work in personnel, for God's sake. There's other jobs. You're a good employee. You're going to be okay. And I tried my best to get everything together. Well, by that time, I went back upstairs. Donna, my roommate's boss, called and said she's not into work. I hung up the phone, looked at my boss. I said, I think she's killed herself. And anyway, that night I was going to my Alateen meeting, but something inside me said, go home first. And sure enough, I went home and I found my roommate, and she had taken her life. And I do not believe that she had to do that to get me to a point where I could take step 6 and 7. But I will say this. She took her life with the car fumes, and I raised up the garage door, and I looked at that carcass, and at first I was angry because I thought, she's got a way out. And it was just like, literally, a beam of light came over me that says, so do you, kid. And no human being has ever given to me what was given to me at that moment in my life. I hunted for it for a number of years, through many men, many situations. And no human power has ever taken it away from me. I became willing at that time to let God show me a different way of living. It was a traumatic situation, and I talked with what I had done was I called the gal who was co-sponsoring with me in this Alateen group, and she came and sat through the entire investigation of the police, and she took me to my meeting that night. And I don't remember that meeting, but I remember I cried, and these people loved me. They didn't ask questions. They just loved me. I found one of my husband's bestest friends, and I roomed with them for a week. My sponsor said, well, kid, go ahead, try it. What do you want to do? I said, well, I really do want to get married, but my husband-to-be says, I'm sorry, but I still don't want to get married. So I just suited up and showed up. My sponsor said, show up at the church. Now, my family does not know what's going on. They're back in Illinois, in St. Louis area, and that's where we were going to get married. And I did. I showed up at the church, and I had no idea if he was going to show up or not. And my sponsor said, just go in, get on your knees, pray, and ask God to go with you, whatever the situation is. If he shows up, go down the aisle and ask God to go out with you. That's a pretty good idea. I'm kind of numb by then, but that's exactly what I did. I opened the door, and there he stood, as handsome as could be, as if nothing had ever taken place, and I wanted to kill him again. Now, just to give you the full circle of that day of my wedding, I have a dear grandmother. God love her heart. She missed a great calling by not being a drunk. She could have been just a great one. My husband-to-be came up with this idea. Now, we haven't been talking with one another because he doesn't want to get married. He came up with this idea of these roses, that he's going to give a rose to my mother and I'd give a rose to his mother. Doesn't that sound romantic? Welcome to the family. He had a third rose that he gave to his daughter. We have no music because it's a small church, you know, just the family. Now, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to use a different word. The word that my grandmother did use started with F, ended with K. It's a small word. I'll use fire truck. It's the still thing, same thing, just a little longer. Quiet, peaceful moment. He hands the rose to his daughter. And my grandmother says, where's my fire truck and rose? And my mother, being the peacemaker that she is, says, Mother, take my rose. I don't want your fire truck and rose. I want my own rose. It was quite a week, folks, I'll tell you that. I looked at my husband and said, welcome to the family. Other than life itself, my dad gave me a wonderful present that night. He took me off to the side, and he says, I want you to do something, Tina. He did not say, I want you to do something. I want you to do something, Tina. I want you to live your own life. Shortly after he died, I found it. It's in one of our pages in our ODAT book. Live your own life. And he was right. Well, we got married. And God is so gracious to me. After you go through suicide with one of your dearest friends, as I did, this is how God worked. Went to that convention, asked this woman to sponsor me. It was long distance. She was in North Little Rock, Arkansas. As I said, my husband had been transferred, and we got transferred to Little Rock, Arkansas. And there was my sponsor already there for me. There was my home group already there for me. And for 2 years, they cradled me. They absolutely cradled me, and I needed it. And I'm telling you, they stuck me in every ounce of service that you can imagine. We did it all. We went to assemblies. We went to this. We went to that. We traveled Louisiana. It doesn't matter where. We just went everywhere, and we had an absolute ball. My husband was traveling about 90% of the time, which was a good idea. I had one incident. He had this deal. You got to watch alcoholics. They're fast talkers. We had this deal. He'd take care of the outside of the house, and I'd take care of the inside of the house. We lived on the side of a hill with pine trees. There was no yard. Cut weeds twice a year. Well, they were growing up over the window, and I mean, we were way up there, and so I thought I'd do him a favor, and I'd cut the weeds one time, because I'm still peep-oopsie-sing. And I had an event with a weed eater, and it won. I rented this weed eater, and I really thought that I could do this, because they said, now, you sure you can handle this little lady? Wrong thing to say. And it was gas-powered, because where I was going, there was no electric, and I could lift it in the store. Of course, it wasn't running, and there was no gas. And once I got it home filled with gas and running, it turned in from a weed eater to a 54 Chevy with Go Fast mud flap. And I kind of spun around with this sucker. And I want you to know that I did something to this muscle, but I went to my meeting that night and it kept doing this. And I was wearing contacts at the time, and I couldn't get my contacts in because this muscle, when I do it like this, my head would go back. So I'd bring my head down and my arm would go down. He came home and never even noticed that I'd cut those weeds. There were opportunities for resentments and how to work through them all through these early years. Out of the blue, I'm happy as a lark. I'm in service work. I love my group. And my husband comes home and says, we're moving. He says, we're going to Omaha, Nebraska. And I really didn't think God knew where Omaha was. I used to call it the last outpost of humanity. I call them the shy and timid prairie people now. We moved there, and my husband's former wife gave us a housewarming gift of his daughter. Now, I will tell you, up until this time, I still didn't know if our marriage was going to work. I literally did not know. This child come to live with us. She was drugging and drinking badly. He's still traveling about 85-90% of the time, and I'm stuck with this kid, and I've never had children in my life. But I had enough program, and thank God she was there, because it helped me to get into the program. For any of you who have moved, I went to Omaha, and they weren't doing it right. Didn't like them. Couldn't find a home group. I will say this, that the first week that we were there, Bill's daughter moved in with us, my sweet, darling little Jennifer. She wasn't that thin, I'll tell you what. I knew she was drinking. I knew she was drugging. I found there was she was down in the lower level of our house where the bedroom was, and a latch on the nightstand had fallen off. So I opened it up to put the screw back on, and in there were pipes, papers, and Visine. She was holding them for a friend. Rage came over me because I thought, if this marriage has, now this is self-centered thought, if this marriage has a chance, this kid could possibly ruin it. Those were my thoughts. And I resented that child so much, and thank God for hotlines. I called the hotline, and I did get a listing of meetings, and I started going to them. At the same time, my sister's on vacation, and she comes to live with me. By this time, my dad is terminally ill. And the first week that we were there, we bought a house with a pool in Omaha. Don't that make sense? The water is green. My sister's come to visit. She's got two kids and her husband. My dad's terminally ill. I've got a drunk daughter, and my husband's traveling. And I got a phone call, and my daddy had died. And it was just a bad week, folks. But, you know, just as it happened the week before I got married, and just as it happened the week after we moved to Omaha, sometimes things like that all happen at one time, so I don't have enough energy to just focus in on one thing. Because I'll control it if I can when things are going wrong. The greatest fear that I had was that my marriage would break up, and I carried that for a long time. That's not the case that happened. We were there for 4 years, and in between there, my stepdaughter did wind up going to treatment. She now has 7 years of sobriety, and she and I are very close, and for that I'm extremely grateful. She thanks me quite a bit for being able to help her, and frankly, I don't remember what I did other than going to meetings and trying to leave her alone and love her as best as I could. During that time that we were in Omaha, there were some things that I needed to do. It was amends time, and I had made some amends. And you know, isn't it odd? Bob said it best, when it's time to make amends, they're right on your face. I mean, they just, whoo. And I didn't know how to do amends. And the first one that I had was, first thing I was honest enough about was, I had cheated Columbia Records. You know, you buy 12 records, you get a double record, you scratch one, you send it back, and they send you the other one back, but you've already recorded it, so you don't need that, so you send it back. You know, just stupid things like that. And so I had told that to my sponsor. She said, well, you need to make an amends. I don't even know how to get in touch with Columbia Records. And you go out to the mailbox that day, and there's Columbia Records sending you an invitation to join up. So, you know, you send them a check for the things that you have done wrong. But there were other major things, such as the man that I was married to. Now, this is how God worked. I was living in Omaha, Nebraska. The last I'd heard, he was living in Idaho. I walked downtown to pick up some information one day, walked in this office, and there he was. And I wanted to say, what are you doing here? But I didn't. I went downstairs, got a hold of a phone, called my sponsor that knew about this back in Arkansas, and she says, baby, you know what to do. And even though I was fearful, I called the man up and said, can I meet with you? And I made that face-to-face amends to him. And he says, well, we were awfully young, weren't we? And I said, yes, we were. And that started the floodgates for me. It started a whole new life for me because I was so fearful of walking down the street. Just about this time, got news that we were being transferred to St. Louis. So we did. We moved to St. Louis. And thank God for that experience with my former husband, because there was a woman in St. Louis who had known that I had had an affair with her husband, and she hated my guts, literally. To me, I was known, to her, I was known as the bitch, literally. And so I moved to St. Louis. I had no home group. Now, we'll back up just a second. I need to tell you this. For anybody that has moved, when I moved from Little Rock up to Omaha, I got down on my knees and said this prayer, God, I need a new group. and I need a new sponsor because that old heifer down in Arkansas said she wasn't going to sponsor me by mail anymore. And so that's exactly what I did. And Judy came into my life, and for that I'm extremely grateful because during those years, she helped me to grow up. So I found out I was going to St. Louis, and sure enough, I moved there, and they weren't doing it right. I couldn't find a home group, so I got back down on my knees and said, God, I need a new home group, and I need a new sponsor. And I started going to meetings, and sure enough, I found just what I needed in Marge. And she had had a similar experience to what I had had as far as resenting someone or someone resenting you. And I didn't know how to get over this because I was so scared of running into this woman. And there was an event coming up where I knew I was going to be seeing her, and sure enough, it was going to be taking place. And a whole different movement took place in my life. I had tried to make an amends to this woman many years ago, and what it was I had taken my fifth step, and I jumped right into step 9 because I wanted her to forgive me. And she told me more or less to eat dirt. That's a nice way of putting it. So anyway, I knew I would see her again. I just knew I would. And that fear consumed my entire system. But my new sponsor and my new home group gave me a whole different way. And frankly, it came in the big book. I had tried everything. I'd inventoried it. I'd done everything. And I'd taken this inventory, and I'd went to Marge, and she says, well, I suggest you pray for her. I suggest you pray for her for 21 days, and we'll see what happens. Now, I don't only want you to just pray for her. I want you to pray that she receives what you want. I said, okay. So for 21 days, I prayed that she received what I wanted, and after 21 days, I still felt terrible. And I went back to her and said, I still feel this awesome fear. Nothing's changed. She says, well, what are you praying for? I said, well, I prayed that she'd have a happy relationship with her kids, forgiveness in her heart, a right relationship with God. And she says, you're praying for everything but what you want. I said, well, what is it that I want? She says, you want forgiveness. So for 21 days, I wanted God to forgive me, so I prayed that God would forgive her. I wanted this woman to forgive me, so I prayed that God would help me to forgive her. And I also wanted to be able to forgive myself, so I prayed that she would forgive herself. And honest to Pete, 21 days later, I wound up talking to this woman on the phone. She had a conversation that she needed to converse with my husband, and sure enough, believe it or not, she didn't hang up. She didn't call me the bitch. She just said, would you pass this information along? And I said, I certainly will. I'd never heard her call me by my name. She just called me the bitch. And I heard through a conversation that she had said my name, Tina. And to me, in the God of my understanding, miracles take place when the name, your name, is said. That's why it's so important, I think, when we say, hi, my name is Tina, and I'm a member of Al-Anon. And that response comes back. It's almost like God saying my name to me. I wound up on the same plane going to the same event out in Colorado with this woman. She was in first class, and I thought that was kind of humorous. I was in coach. But that was after that prayer. And when I saw her, I was released. Somehow or another, God had worked a miracle in my life, and for that I was extremely grateful. Believe it or not, after that, we got transferred back to Omaha, Nebraska. And we were there for a year and a half. And they weren't doing it right. Same people I just left. I mean, same groups, but they weren't doing it right. And through God's grace, I found another sponsor. Started another group, believe it or not, but I wound up back at my old home group. And I needed that time because I needed some closure and there were some things to take place. I'm trying to wrap this up because I know y'all been sitting since 8:30 this morning and your brains can't absorb anymore and your butt can withhold. Many things went together when we went back to Omaha. And my dear sponsor, Deirdre, took me back to where I could look at what had happened, particularly with my mother. Just to wrap some things up here, I didn't know my dad, as I said. But before I left Little Rock, Arkansas, on my way to Omaha, and I knew my daddy was dying, a friend of mine said to me, what is it that you wanted to do with your dad that you've never done? And I, without even thinking about it, I said, I've never spent a night with my dad by myself as an adult. She says, well, let's pray about it. It was Father's Day weekend. I drove from Arkansas up to Illinois to visit my dad. He was very emaciated by that time. There was nothing, hardly anything left of him. And it really hurt my heart to see this. But my stepmother, Jean, came up to me and said to me, Tina, I'm in a golf tournament and it's out of town and I don't want to leave your dad by himself. Is there any way that you could spend the night with him? And I went, yeah, I think I can do that. and it was like a dream come true. And I got a chance to make my amends to my dad at that time, and I got to see a part of my dad that I'd never seen before. It was a miracle that had taken place in my life, and for that I'm eternally grateful to this program and people who love me. Back in fifth grade, when I was having so much trouble with school, and I blamed alcohol for all of my trouble and all of that thing, there was just something in my stomach in these last several years that said, there's a little bit more to that. And God put into my place, into my path, people with learning disabilities. And I went and had a test, and sure enough, I do have a learning disability. And in fifth grade, they started giving timed reading tests. And that's when I started having problems. And that's when I started writing in hieroglyphics, because if they couldn't read it, they wouldn't know I didn't know how to spell. And all of a sudden, that helped me to forgive my mother, because God love her heart, although she'd been affected by alcoholism for so long, and many generations back, she was always there to love me and to tell me, you can do anything. You can do it, kid. But I knew that I couldn't, and for all of these years, I have felt so stupid. I have felt so dumb. And I found a key that really and truly unlocked an entire different world for me, and it helped me to forgive my mom, because I had held so many things against her. And as I said earlier, she just really and truly wanted the best for me. Mr. Kirksey, who was my speech teacher, the man who helped me back in my youth, not only have I made amends for people that I've done wrongs to, I made it a point to check him out, to find him and thank him, and say, thank you for helping me, because the alcoholism was so crazy and I needed an outlet and you gave it to me. And I told him a little bit about it, and he says, you know, and I blew his anonymity, but he says, I've been in AA for about 2 years now. And I said, isn't that amazing? He says, I never drank during those years. I never drank during those years. Later on is when I drank. And I said, well, just remember this. Your teaching helped me to have my outlet. Isn't that amazing how God works? I had to take a look back, because my mom had truly thought that I got married to get away from her, that first marriage. And what I did was I got married because I gave my virginity away and I was a good girl. And you know what? That helped me also to forgive my mom when I figured that out. That was a great door of opening. The letting go of my beloved Donna, who had taken her life, there was a dear, sweet gal by the name of Linda Mack, who is in Arkansas. And she helped me to pray many different prayers of God coming back, help me heal this God in my heart, because I felt so guilty that there was something I could have done differently. And that has taken place in my life through prayer and the working of these steps and other people's experience that's gone before me. When we were in Kansas City and right before my husband and I were to get married, I was offered a job, and I do not have a college graduate degree. I only have a high school diploma. And I was offered a personnel director's job at the second largest institution there in Kansas City, and I gave that up. And then he didn't want to get married, and I held resentments against my husband for the longest time, and I didn't realize that. And through the grace of God and the steps, particularly 4 through 10, as Bob was talking about last night, healing started taking place in my life. I wanted children very badly, and I can't have them. In Omaha, the sponsor that God gave to me the second time was a young gal who's my age exactly, who never had children. I'm just telling you these things because I feel like whatever we need, God brings it to us. He brings it to us in odd packages, but He brings it to us. Since I wanted my children so badly, it was during that second round in Omaha that my stepdaughter started calling me and asking me things, and she just helped me so much to fill that gap. At the present moment, my stepson has moved in with us during the summer, and somehow or another, it just feels right in here. I don't want to be his mother, but I do want to be his stepmother, and for that, I'm really grateful. We took our real honeymoon, because you see, after the marriage and the fire truck and all that that took place beforehand, we went on our honeymoon. We had a bereavement grief weekend. We cried through the whole weekend in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. It was terrible. And a year later after my dad had died and my husband had gone through family week because of his daughter's treatment, he came back from that. We were in our dining room. He got down on his knees and said, will you pray with me? And I said, okay. I didn't know what we were going to do. And he asked God to bless our marriage. And I knew from that moment on that we stood a real good chance. And that's exactly what happened. A year after that, we went on vacation, found the most beautiful place in the entire world. You may think Texas is it, but for me, it was this beautiful place that we went. And it wound up being our honeymoon. When we moved back to Omaha, they offered an early retirement, and my husband qualified, and we accepted it. And we got to move to this beautiful place, and that's why just a month ago, I moved to Florida. And that's why I'm from Florida now. And for that, I'm just extremely grateful. I have a new sponsor. Her name is Alice. She's an absolute hoot. She gave up scuba diving at 70. We should be in for a real treat. Once again, I just want to thank you for the opportunity, for your attention. I know your butts are dead, but I thank you for your loving kindness that you have given me. I am living a life today with a man that I love, one man. I can go into a restaurant with him and come out with him. And I mean mentally, physically, and emotionally. That's a miracle. I didn't live that way before. Now, I'm not saying we are living happily ever after. But I am telling you that we are living happy, joyous, and freely. God bless you all. Thank you.